Today on The Grave Talks, tour through a haunted life, a conversation with Cisco Murdoch. Cisco Murdoch has led a haunted life for almost as long as she can remember. Growing up in a haunted farmhouse, she'd find herself tormented by a flying head with a red bandana moving through her room late at night. Cisco and her family would find themselves face to face with spirits for the years they called this house a home. These experiences would lead her on a journey of exploration into the world of the supernatural.
Well, I can tell you that I went through this and I did a lot of deep thought on this when I was writing the book, because when I put stuff in the book, I was trying to be very honest. And anytime you sit down, you know this, I mean, even just writing other people's stories, when you were doing you and Jenny were doing yours, you know, a compilation of stories, you want it to be as true to tale as possible. So I started thinking, what is my earliest memory of not just the event, but everything that was going on around? And I came up with about 4 years old. Now, I could remember stuff before that, but it was such, it could have been explained away, like flashes, or did I really see that, or, you know, what, you know what I mean? And you're
sure.
Four.
Yeah.
But the major thing that I remember with the most clarity, and I mean a lot of senses, from smell, sound, sight, the whole shebang, what did I feel, was the flying head in the farmhouse, in the haunted farmhouse I lived in. And what a great first experience to have a head come flying at you.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty dramatic. It's not the typical, I heard a noise or I saw a shadow, a flying head. Walk us through that experience. What exactly happened?
Well, I know from experience, you and I and Jenny have been talking for a long time. I remember when you first got started in this and I started calling in. And so a lot of these stories were first brought into the public via Real Ghost Stories Online, mm-hmm. because I would call it and go, here, I have one similar to that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I would tell you about it. We'd try to compare. But so I did tell this one. Now, I was, as far back as I can remember, I know I was around between 3.5, 4, maybe a little older, because I lived there for about 2 years. So I can pinpoint age that way. Unfortunately, a lot of my family members are not around to ask. So, you know, that's what I'm going on. But I was taking a nap. I guess I was put in bed in my mother's room, which was on the first floor of the farmhouse, and a large king size bed with a chenille bedspread. And I remember that, anybody who doesn't know what that is, it's the ones that have the bumps on it. So if you fall asleep, you got the pock marks from the chenille bedspread. Anybody in my age group would raise their hand and go, I know what she means. So I'm laying on this and I hear a crackling. Crack, like, I want to say an electrifying crack, but it was deeper than that. Like, if you took an empty water bottle and just kept crackling it, mm-hmm. it crackles, pops, and, you know, I heard that. And I think that's what woke me up. And I remember not being scared, but it was also one of my first on, like, picking up deep sadness and depression as an empath. So I'm picking up that, and I'm trying to figure out what's going on. I'm just waking up, and I remember feeling the pock marks on my face and from the chenille bedspread thing. And I'm trying to figure out where the crackling and popping is coming from. It's coming from the closet. Now, my parents had this great big walk-in closet, but it had shutter doors, the kind that you would open up and then fold up against itself. And I'm looking, I hear the crackling again, I look again, and there's this light kind of starting to come from underneath the shutter doors of the closet, as well as the crackling. And as I'm focusing in on that, the light is pushing through the bottom and then starts coming through the slats, very, like it's growing, like there's a light inside of the closet growing and pushing through these slats on the shutters, as well as the crackling is getting louder.
Yeah.
And the electricity in the room is changing. The atmosphere, the feeling, you know, the goosebumps on, sure. on your arms start, the hairs on the back of your neck kind of thing. And I'm just sitting there leaning forward, and middle of what felt like a massive king size, you know, California bed. My dad was like 6'6", so their bed was huge. Mm-hmm. And I'm watching this, and the light is pushing out. Now, I've seen, films, movies, and stuff like that, where I've seen this, you know, this actual thing happening with light in the closet coming through shutter doors, and it's almost like having like PTSD, where you see something like that shocks you back in time, and you're there again. That's happened to me.
Sure.
So the light is growing, getting bigger, and it's pushing through the slats, and through with the light starts coming this. It was kind of neat because it was like a sparkling, it almost like there was little bits of glitter in the light. And I'm just focusing on this because it's like, what's happening right? You're frozen.
Yeah.
I'm focusing on the light. And as the glittering starts and the crackling is getting louder, all of a sudden the crackling stopped and the glitter, whatever that was, sparkling, starts coming together and forming a mass. And within the mass, very quickly, dark form starts forming. And then it becomes a face. Then the face becomes a head. And then the head is pushing out and above me and coming directly towards me and floating. Eyes closed. And it's floating towards me. And as it's floating towards me, I'm just leaning back like away from it.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it got right in front of me. The eyes open and the jaw dropped as if into a scream. But no sound came out, and I just leaned back, fell on the bed, and it went above me. And as it went above me and flew above me, I could see it had a ponytail with like a red ribbon. I remember the red ribbon as a kid. I remembered that the red ribbon matched its eyes. Now, the eyes were not red, but the light coming from the eyes was red.
Mm-hmm.
Blew above me, hit the wall behind me, and disappeared into the wall. And that's when the screaming started, and that screaming was coming from me. You know, isn't that crazy?
It's an amazing experience, and it's so detailed as to what you saw and what you went through. Is there any, as you retrospectively look back on this, obviously at the moment you're a terrified child having this experience, but as you got older, was there any understanding as to the history of this farmhouse or to the identity of this head?
Yes and no. And what I mean by that is this, as like I said, I picked this as my first experience to explain, you know, when I was trying to grasp ideas and theories and thoughts and what the hell was this, you know, The reason it was so profound was, of course, now I'm screaming, I'm a kid taking a nap, and whoever was babysitting me at home, because I had at the time, there was, I think, 7 of us at home, so, and 5 of them being girls. So somebody was babysitting me. So the door bursts open. And here comes my mom and 2 sisters. And they right away, they whisked me up. And I remember just being, you know, picked up and everybody saying, oh, you're having a nightmare. And you know, the normal things that would be all said at the same time by 3 females.
Sure.
In an emergency. I get carried into the living room. And I remember one sister taking me from my mom. And just my mom's telling me, you had a nightmare. It's okay. It's not real. Yada, yada. And then she's whisking me off to the kitchen for probably a snack, an apple, a cookie, something, which is always what happened when something like that happened in the house. You know, give her a cookie, she'll shut up. As I'm being carried away, all I could say, red ribbon, red eyes, red ribbon, red ribbon, red eyes, red ribbon, and, you know, like some kind of, I'm stuck in a loop.
Yeah.
And then I hear my sister, I heard cookie and I shut up. Then I heard my sister, mom, red ribbon, and the red eyes, just like I told you. So at that moment in time, I then realized my sister had seen something similar too.
Yeah.
And in my household, you didn't really talk about this stuff because my father was just so dead set against it. Everything was hush hush and under, you know?
Yeah.
And you didn't sit around the coffee table and go, so what did you see today? You know, oh, you know, the such and such flew across the kitchen. You didn't do that. Everything was held down. And then I found out later, of course, I had several other experiences with the same ghost in different manifestations, like sometimes full body, sometimes half body, sometimes just a, you know, shadow that looked like him going through a wall. But it took about 18 to 20 years later. We all left that farmhouse not long after these. We were only there about 3 years. And everybody split up, being older, went in different directions. So it was not till a family reunion about 18 to 20 years later that actually people started talking about this. And I realized everybody in that house had seen him. He was a Revolutionary War soldier. Mm-hmm. And everybody had seen him in different, like I said, manifestations. So I think that one, I felt nothing but sorrow for him. I felt great depression for him. Even as a kid, I wasn't really afraid. I was startled, but I felt more sorry for him than anything. And I think that's what started me on my quest to help as many human ghosts as I could along the way. That's what got me started.
Do you think he was a conscious entity of a human ghost, where he was just going about his thing, or was it some sort of residual energy that was playing about and you were witness to it? What do you think was going on there?
I don't know, because basically a lot of this is based on theories. We like to think we know.
Yeah.
But as much as I could possibly lean toward the I know thing here, I can only go by my filters and my feelings, what I heard, and then add in later on, 20 years later, everybody else's visuals, you know, and what their thoughts and what their feelings were. My sister's also an empath, would pick up, she would get woken up out of sleep. Of course, now she was about 17, 18 when this was happening to her, so she had a little bit of a different viewpoint. But she said that what woke her up was this overwhelming doom, not fear, doom against her, but somebody was going through a great depression, a great melancholy was the word she used. Mm-hmm. And I thought that funny because it matched some of mine. You know, being an empath, that would possibly be the pain he was going through, the sadness, the great whatever, would wake you up before anything else. And then you're brought into the experience. Whereas some people have the experience and they get the feelings, you know, the fear and everything covers everything up. So I think he was a combination. I think some of the things we saw, there was one sister, and I didn't see this, but she said she saw almost something playing out in the kitchen, you know, a revolutionary, you know, a fight between an older couple and somebody dressed in this type of uniform, whether it was him or not, I do not know.
Yeah.
I think that was residual. But he definitely had some experiences, not just with me, but with several other members of the family, where he was actually interacting. So as well as moving things physically, and apportation, you know, taking objects and bringing them back in a different location, whether that was him or not, I don't know. We can only guess. Could have been somebody else or something else. But the interaction he had, he's reacting, his facial expressions was reacting to other people and touching physical things and trying to get attention, that he did that as well. I think he was, of course, this was in New Jersey, in the farmland in Jackson, New Jersey, and there was quite a few skirmishes in the Revolutionary War. People hid out, people kept soldiers and quartered them, and things like that. Was he wounded? Was it one of those things where he might have been hurt and they were harboring him and keeping him hidden? He died there. The stories could go on and on. I have no proof of any of it.
Sure.
But, and like I said, in the book, I try to go back through. I found out later on that my mother wanted a large pantry built in the kitchen, and she had bugged my dad. He was one of those who just, you know, he didn't want to do it. I'll get it later. And he had a Sunday afternoon where he was, you know, well into a couple six packs and decided to take a sledgehammer and finally knock out the wall in the kitchen. And I guess got my brother to help. And when he's knocking down this wall, they find a hidden staircase and a little room, and apparently some paperwork and some letters and some old candles and things like this that were just, why anybody would board up something like that, I have no clue. But within the trash and everything else, my brother told me later on that he found My dad found paperwork and things like that, that he had him put on the bonfire and burn, like he was burning all the debris that came from the, to just throw it on there. I don't want to hear any of this mess.
Yeah.
And so historical documents were burnt that day, and one of them had a red ribbon in it. So we're left to just thoughts. Could it be?
All the years later, when everyone kind of came back together and started talking about this, was your father around to discuss any of it as everyone kind of came forward to say, look, I had these experiences too? Did he ever at some point say or acknowledge maybe there was more going on than he wanted to admit to?
Absolutely not. It would absolutely set him off. And that's another thing about that whole experience in that house. When you and I and Jenny have often talked about what came first, the chicken or the egg. So here's my dad, who was a World War II veteran, a Green Beret, and had what they called then shell shock. Mm-hmm. Now it's PTSD.
Sure.
So he also helped quell all that stuff with a lot of alcohol.
Yeah.
And he was one that would start early and move through. And that would make him very violent, very angry. And just, you know, he didn't want to talk about anything that was nonsensical. So that was that. Now, did he come into the house and because of his negative energy, you know, or his mood or just whatever you want to call that, did that wake something up in the house? Mm-hmm. Did the house and things that were going on in the house wake something up in him? Did they feed off each other? All good questions.
Yeah. Do you suspect or wonder if he did, in fact, have some experiences of himself with himself that he just never talked about, that were just too unexplainable and too scary, that were just, you know, he knew something happened, but he's not going to ever share that?
100%.
Yeah.
100%. Because then I can look back and I could ask one of my sisters who's more willing to talk about it than others. There was a lot of bad stuff that went down in that house, human stuff. So, yeah. You know, not everybody can even get past that, let alone and all this other stuff. But yeah, those times that my mom was saying he was in the kitchen having an argument with somebody who wasn't there. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, tossing stuff into the corner, being scared. For a man like that, you got to think, you know, soldier quality, been through the war. We have no idea. You know, he was in North Africa and Italy under like some heavy stuff. Mm-hmm. That alone. And then you start adding this stuff into it.
Yeah.
And I look back and I think, you know, gosh, all those times we thought Dad was losing his mind, or he thought he was losing his mind, he might have very well seen something. Yeah. Or something was, you know, getting back at him. Could have been that the ghost was being protective of us and just trying to stop it.
Sure.
Because he was also pretty physically violent. There's so many questions in this. It's like a big vat of just question marks, just intertwining. That whole experience was just nuts. But boy, you want to talk about something just catapulting you off onto, you know, what's going on now, 50 years of trying to figure out, answering some questions here.
Yeah.
And I just have more questions than I have answers. I have zero answers. That's thoughts. It's true.
That's how it goes. You know, you're exactly right. It's you start into it and you think, oh, I'm going to figure some of this out, or at least I'll have a better direction. And the more you talk about it, the more you hear stories, the more questions you have. And, you know, you can be more informed than you were initially. I think that's very true. But I hate the term expert when it gets thrown around. Like if I'm doing an interview or something, it's like, and an expert in this, like, no, not an expert. Like more, I've heard probably more stories than most, so I can relate more experiences, but I have no expert. Expert to me implies some sort of knowledge that others don't have, or answers that others don't have. And I have more questions than I have answers as well. So when you said, you know, that,
think about it, not to cut you off, but just to say this, because that's a great lead in for this.
Yeah.
If you ever do get to communicate with what we consider to be earthbound spirits, or spirits of human beings who have crossed over, whatever that means, mm-hmm. and come back to communicate, they're not experts either. They'll tell you, we don't know.
Yeah.
Or we have this much, but we don't know that. So if the dead can't tell you what the dead are doing,
yeah.
How are we got to be experts on it, you know?
Exactly. There's this assumption, I think, sometimes that the dead have this, you know, this knowledge that suddenly that is granted to them because they're dead. And I think that is one of the biggest misnomers, at least an assumption I would make, is that, okay, now I'm on this side and I still know just as much as I did on the other side, except now I have this whole other world to try and navigate.
It's so true, though.
Yeah.
I mean, you can get snippets. You can get snippets, it seems. You know, you can get little bits. But it seems to honestly, I often say, you know, if I have guests on my show or something, I ask them, you know, if you learned one thing from the dead about living, what would it be? Mm-hmm. And most of them, 99, you know, I'll even say go as high as 95% of it is they always come back with a message of love or, you know, that's not important. Quit spending time on that, you know, live your life, do the best you can, be the best you can be, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Love continues on. Love never ends. Mm-hmm. And, you know, basically that this is almost some kind of a school, a learning process.
Yeah.
That's in a nutshell, that seems to be it. But if you ask them particularly, you know, what their visual of the other side is, every single one of them, even though similarities occur within, they each seem to have their own, just like we do.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
You had said earlier that this experience was kind of the catalyst that brought a lot of curiosity to you. It brought you to the realm and the thought of, well, how can I help these folks on the other side cross over? What exactly was it that you felt was, I guess, the concept of them wanting to cross over or needing help to cross over, and not just, they're just there. They're just on the other side. They're doing their thing. They don't necessarily need or want our intervention. What was the feeling on your part that you thought, I need to help. I need to be of some assistance to these people. Was there an incident where it was just clear to you saying these people or some of these are wanting my help on this side?
Right. With this particular soldier ghost, mm-hmm. it was several times I saw him. He almost seemed to be like being pulled away and holding out his hand. And I he didn't see him move his. So it would have been telepathically. Wasn't moving his mouth. But I heard, help me. I need help. Help me.
Okay.
I actually heard it twice. So that mixed with the filters and the feelings of being an empath, I was feeling he needed help. But he didn't seem to ever have, now I look back on it, and you pick that apart with some knowledge and some experience, and it's easier to filter it through. But as a child, I could never get past that. And I think, too, it was compounded that, you know, as a child, any child that's living in a household that has that kind of upheaval in it,
mm-hmm.
You got five teenage girls all going to college, high school at the same time. You got a dad who's like, you know, doing his thing and always these outbursts and, you know, things. And then you got a brother in there who's in the middle of all these females, can't do anything. And then you got this ghost that's asking whatever the heck was in the basement or in the, you know, in the barn, which was totally different. I don't think that was human. But all of this compounded on the same property. I came out of that probably wanting to help my family and felt not useless, but, you know, I couldn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a kid, can't fix things that adults are going through. And I might have focused on that ghost because it was something I could anchor. Mm-hmm. You know, and I want to learn more about, it's possible. I mean, that's psychology 101, you know, toward the end of the book. So I don't know, but that's just a guess. But I felt like if I learned more, I might be able to help the next one. I could never help that one.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I came back 40 years later to try to see if there was, you know, if the house was still there. Of course, it's gone. It's a development now. And I almost want to go knock on doors and go, hey.
Yeah.
You got any issues in your house? You know, because if I could find that one guy, you know, that would be great. That would be a great ending to the story, but chances of that happening. So you help what you can, you know, but they have free will.
Sure.
You just want to make sure that they know if you can, it's like therapy, very calmly, if you get one who will interact with you and will communicate in whatever way that may be, then once you get through the barriers of hey, you know, what are you seeing on your side? You know, are we in your house or are you just coming here? Because you don't know. You have to break all that down. What's their visual? Mm-hmm. Like the movie The Others. If anybody has ever seen that, that was great the way it was done, because you're watching Nicole Kidman's character going through and seeing her kids and seeing her husband come in this fog and trying to talk to her. And when the whole movie ends, you figure out that she thinks the people living in her house now are the ghosts. Mm-hmm. And the people that are actually living are trying to communicate with her. And she just has this revelation of, oh my God, I'm dead.
Yeah.
And it's very similar to that. You know, you don't just assume that you know that they're gone. They might be assuming that you're what are you doing in my house? They sure. might only have split seconds of visual, and you're sitting in what used to be their chair. You know, mm-hmm. There's so many levels.
Yeah, and it can be very, very confusing. I want to talk about your first experience of helping something crossover, but before we get to that, I want to ask another question about the farmstead, and you said the barn, that there was something out there that you believed was not human. What experiences did you have in that barn that led you to that conclusion?
Okay, I can remember, I know I had a tricycle, you know, like the little three-wheel dealios. Mm-hmm. And I had I cannot remember honestly if it was birthday or Christmas, but I got what was a little green pedal car. And for people don't realize, you get in, you pedal it, you go around, you pretend you're, it looked like a little MG, but it was a little green pedal car. Now, all this stuff was kept in the barn. And along with other things, and it was a tractor of the owner of the property, whatever, borrowed half the barn. So it was already, to a kid, you would think, oh gosh, this is great for exploring. Hayloft, they had all kind of stuff. There was actually a swing that came out of the hayloft that might, you know, you'd think that teenagers and stuff like that would be all over some of the stuff in this barn, but nobody went. Nobody wanted to go in. As a child, I had my stuff in there, and nobody wanted to go in and get it out for them. That's one, you know, and it could have just been teenagers that just didn't do anything to help their little sister. So I used to have to go down, and I remember walking, it was a little path from the back door around kind of the corner of the cornfield. It was massive cornfields there, and which were creepy on their own right. But as I got to the barn, you get this overwhelming sense of, I'd say now foreboding, but then it was, not only are you being watched, but you're not wanted. And I don't know how to describe that. It's like, you don't go in here, don't come here. And I'm just trying to get to my pedal car, which was just, there was nothing like getting in that pedal car and going up down the dirt path to that. It was just freedom and fun, you know, with a little convertible, it's great. So that was keeping me from that car. And I pushed through it. And when I finally get the door open to get into that pedal car, it would just seem like the shadows in there would come alive. And I don't know how to explain that. It could have been just through the barn slats, the sun, whatever. And you just want to get out. You just want to get out. Now, did I really see shadow figures? Did I really see one almost lurch out and go to grab me? Was that my imagination? I can't tell you, but I know this, that I would be in trouble if I didn't put my toys back. Everybody, that house was had to keep it in kind of like almost a military air. Mm-hmm. So very, put your stuff back, everything in its place kind of thing, or I would have been out of hand quick with that many teenagers and stuff. I was supposed to put that car back in the barn, and I would always leave it out in front of the door and take the punishment instead, because I did not want to go back into that barn. That's pretty profound.
Yeah.
If you got it. I'd rather take the punishment.
Sure. Sure.
That's all I can tell you. Because I'm not sure if, you know, if it was just my fear taking over as a child, mm-hmm. or that shadow actually did reach out for me, mm-hmm. or my imagination was out of, you know, and I never had anybody back that later with a statement other than, I didn't go in that barn.
Yeah.
I'd rather go in the cellar before I'd go in that barn. And all of those on top of each other kind of make this one big case for that, you know, but I don't know of it.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with Cisco Murdoch about a tour through a haunted life. Be sure to check out her book, We Are All Children in the Wilderness of the Afterlife, A Guided Tour Through a Haunted Life, available on Amazon on ebook and paperback. In part two of our conversation, we'll talk about, does environment play a role in a haunted atmosphere in terms of the people in that environment? What was the first experience Cisco had helping a spirit cross over? What haunting experience did Cisco have in Gettysburg? And can you help something non-human cross over or at the least move to another location? Until next time for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.